Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Pubcor Fiscal Year 2020 Financial Results Investor Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during this session, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. Please be advised that this conference is being recorded today. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Daryl Abatami. Thank you. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us for Pubcor's 2020 financial year results. First up, I'd like to introduce and welcome Noel Meehan, Pubcor's new Chief Financial Officer, who was appointed on the 1st of July 2020, and Noel is joining me on this call, and we'll talk in a little while. 2020 financial year was like no other year I've experienced. It was a roller coaster ride impacted by ongoing drought, bushfires, and in the last 6 months in particular, the COVID pandemic. We've experienced some low periods, like through March and April, and some highs, and the big highs like May, June, and that continued into July. However, the impact of COVID particularly affected our New Zealand business, where government-imposed restrictions were the hardest. The resilience of Pubcor businesses and our team members showed through all of the challenges. So up front, I'd like to thank all Pubcor's team members and franchisees for their dedication, support, and understanding during these challenging times. We'd also like to thank our customers, suppliers, and landlords for their support, as well as to say thank you to our shareholders. We were particularly touched by your support during our equity raising, which was done in April and May. So now on to some of the details of the year, and these details were lodged with the ASX this morning and are available either on the ASX website or on Pubcor's website. So I'm turning to page 3 in the presentation that was given to the ASX this morning, and I'll refer to the page numbers in that presentation as I go through. So Pubcor delivered a solid result in a very unpredictable year. We saw revenue up nearly 13%, and if you exclude the couple of acquisitions during the year, it was up 7%. Our EBITDA pre-AASB 16 was down 4.1% to 157.8, and our net profit after tax came in at 89.1 million. It's the second highest NPAT we've recorded, and it was only last year that was higher. So our revenue was a record, and earnings was a record in Burson, in the Burson trade business, in our retail business, and also in our specialist wholesale business. Burson same-store sales are up 6%, so it's a very strong performance over the 12 months, and they're up 14% in May and June, so you can see that the March-April period was hit them pretty hard. Autobarn same-store sales are up nearly 10%, so 9.5% in FY20, so it's a very, very good performance, but they were up over 50% in May and June, and that's continued. So that sort of emphasised what I said about a roller coaster year. New Zealand, as I mentioned, was impacted by COVID-19, with their same store sales being down about 9%. Our cash conversion was at a record of 125% pre-AASB 16, and Noel will talk more about that. We had the successful equity raising of $236 million, and that's resulted in our leverage at the end of June being at 0.7 times. We have declared a final dividend of 9.5 cents a share, fully franked, same as we had in FY19. And that brings our full-year dividend to 17.5 cents. So dividends up over the full year by 3% on the prior year. Particularly note that the dividend is paid out of our cash flow from operations. So we generated more than adequate cash there to pay a dividend at the rate that we are, and that will then only be about 60% of earnings. So share price at 30th of June, it was up 6% on the prior June. So again, everyone has done reasonably well out of the business in this year. Turning to page 4, our team members effectively managed an external environment and made progress on delivering on our strategy. So we added the truck line business, so we're now in heavy commercial trucks. So we now cover all vehicles on road. Truck line contributed in the year $57 million and an EBITDA of 2.8. And that was well ahead of our expectations. Those that recall, we said that we didn't expect it to deliver much in the year, and it actually has performed very well. We've invested in retail point of sale and the warehouse management system, IT infrastructure, and our new distribution centre at Tullamarine, and I'll talk about these a bit later. We added 45 branches, we've proactively handled COVID-19, and we reset our staffing levels. So we did have approximately a 5% reduction in our overall staffing numbers. Our retail continues to bear fruit with the new management team. They've introduced new marketing, store formats and store standards. We've done inventory injections, and the online sales there are up over 240% for the year. We're going to be giving to all our permanent staff an incentive, which is a thank you incentive for their work during the year during what has been a very difficult period. On working capital to sales, we've improved in the management of our inventory and also our debtors, but also we've made prudent provisions at the end of the year to cover debtors and inventory, reflecting the economic uncertainty we're in. Just one other area to mention is that we also recorded significant costs of about $10 million in our statutory accounts, and this relates predominantly to our new DC at Tullamarine. Noel will cover that a little bit later as well. So now if we move to page 7, which shows the performance over the last 5 years, you can see that we have compound average growth rate still sitting in revenue at 21%, NPAT's compound average growth rate of 20%. So the business over the last 5 years continues to perform well. And pre-COVID, we certainly were tracking well for this year, but as a lot of other business found, it did have an impact in a couple of months. So turning to the details by business segment, pardon me, on page 8, we had record results in three of our segments. So you've got trade, specialist wholesale and retail. They were all record revenue and record profit results. Bapcor New Zealand was impacted by the COVID shutdowns, which were more stringent in New Zealand. In group and eliminations, we have made in the year some prudent and you could call conservative charges relating to inventory, doubtful debts, etc. And I'll cover those in a little bit more detail. Page 9 just shows that we're still predominantly a trade-focused business, but at retail being at around 17% of our earnings, it's still very important to us overall. Now, if I move on to page 10, which is the Burson trade. So another record year for our Burson business. So this segment continues to go from strength to strength. And that's despite having a very soft March and April, where same-store sales were negative. So Burson had record revenue up 7.1%. They had a very successful six-month promotion. The same-store sales for the year, 6%. And that's May and June were very strong months at 14% same-store sales. And during that time, 70% of our stores set new record revenue performances. So it's an amazing result. We added 5 stores. The equipment business that forms part of the Burson trade generated $39.4 million of revenue. So again, record revenue in that business, and that business continues to grow well. Our own brand jumped to be 31% of our sales, and our working capital management continues to improve. One of the things to mention is that the first half, our EBITDA margin for sales was down a bit. It certainly recovered in the second half, so it got up to 15.4%. And that's particularly after the main promotion that we ran in the first 6 months finished and also the selling price increase that was put through. So on page 11, you can see the history of growth and excellent performance in Burson Trade business. Continues to grow, continues to perform better, and continues to serve the customers very well. Moving on to New Zealand, which is our other trade-focused core business. As I mentioned earlier, New Zealand was significantly impacted by the enforced restrictions, but our business reacted swiftly in taking all the steps that were necessary. We did receive a $3.9 million New Zealand government subsidy. However, all of that was paid to team members who otherwise would have been stood down. And to emphasise that, in the same period as the subsidy applied, on top of the subsidy, we also paid out an additional $4 million in wages. So we did not receive a net subsidy when it was all paid out to our people. And June, the business recovered pretty strongly to beat the pre-COVID sales level that had been set in February. So it's our business bounces back very, very quickly. In New Zealand, we did, during the year, open a new 6,000 square metre warehouse in Auckland. Their own brand sales jumped to 30%, and also they've been very focused on optimising the use of working capital, and they did a good job in doing that during the period. Page 13, we've got record revenue and earnings in the specialist wholesale business. Revenue was up 26%, driven by acquisitions. However, even excluding the acquisitions, revenue was still up 5.5%. One of the things to highlight here is that in this part of the business, we've actually increased our investment in people resources quite significantly. And this is in the management side, finance, in HR, and particularly in marketing, due to the significant increase in the size of the segment. So if you look at the size of this segment, it's now $500 million segment, and it's the second biggest in revenue and earnings when you look at it in how we report in our business. So we decided that we needed to continue to grow this and set ourselves well to enable us to continue to grow by investing in the management resources. They've launched numerous new programs. We mentioned the acquisition of Truckline in December, and that it's generated good revenue and good earnings during the period. So what we expect to see here is that this segment will continue strong growth, and especially as the commercial vehicle group performance continues to increase, which is certainly occurring. Turning to retail, so we actually had record sales and earnings in retail, and one of the things I'd point out here is that whilst we report sales of almost $300 million, you can almost double that if you were to include the end sales of our franchisees, recognising that we do not include the sales of our franchisees, we only include the product that we sell to them. If you look at what those franchisees sell, you can almost double the revenue. So retail for us is really a $600 million segment. It's even though we report it's a $300 million one. We had a brilliant performance out of the Autobarn stores, 9.5% up for the full year, and the company stores were up 14.5% and the franchisees were up 6.6%. So still a very good performance. And you can see there, May and June, just performances I've never seen before. When you've got same-store sales over 50%, that's an amazing performance, and it continued in July. We added 13 new Autobarn company stores. Our online was exceptionally strong, going up 240% for the year, and I'll talk about what we're doing investing further in this area. And May and June online was actually up 400%, so that again reflects very, very strong sales in this business. What I would add here is that the new management team are doing a remarkable job in reinvigorating and expanding the segment. They've introduced new multimedia marketing calendars, brand awareness, brand compliance, etc. And we still expect big things to come from this segment. So retail is an area that is performing very, very well for us. Thailand, I won't talk very much about this because they were impacted by the government's restrictions. We do have the 6 locations. After they came out of the restrictions for COVID, they actually achieved a record revenue in the month of June. And they're now focused on rolling out the electronic catalogue, which is an online business-to-business system, and to continue to get the stores established and grow the relationship with the workshop groups. So, and unfortunately, as with the COVID restrictions, it does restrict our ability to expand in the short term. But as soon as those restrictions are over, then it makes it, we'll be in a much better position to look at what we do with this business. So now I'd like to hand over to Noel for his inaugural performance.
Thanks, Darryl, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to join the call. I'll take some time just going through the main financial sort of slides and give them some more detail. But before I do that, let me sort of just make mention of the AASB 16 leasing standard. And you'll see in the appendices we've given data on both a pre and post basis. In summary, just to recap, in FY19, operating leases were treated as an expense as part of our occupancy expenses and treated as an operating activity from a cash flow perspective. With the adoption of AASB 16, they're now treated as a finance lease, and in the P&L terms, they're split between depreciation and interest, and in the cash flow, they're treated as part of financing activities. The net effect of all of that, and you'll see it on slide 32 if you care to look at that later, is that the EBITDA, because of the adoption of the leasing standard, increases by $59 million. Depreciation increases by $53 million, and interest goes up by $6 million. And so the impact on profit is basically zero, and to be absolutely precise, it's a decline of $0.4 million. So in summary on that, the leasing standard makes no impact apart from presentation on our cash flow, and there's no impact on our banking covenants. If I may just talk through slide 17. As you see on the slide, we've seen good revenue growth up to 12.8% or $166 million on the year. It was, as Darryl mentioned in his opening, assisted by the acquisitions in the current year, as well as the full year impact from the prior year acquisition of the CVG Group. If you exclude those acquisitions, you still do see very strong revenue growth of over 7% with records in a number of the businesses. Gross margin percentage, you can sort of see there that it's slightly declined by 0.4 percentage points. That's really because of some competition, the impact of sales promotions in the first half, some depreciation of the currencies, both in Australian dollars and also in the New Zealand dollar, and the prudent conservative provisioning that we took on inventory for two reasons. One, because we are obviously getting ready for the consolidation into the new Victorian distribution centre, and also part of the implications of the restrictions on COVID meant we weren't able to do 100% of our stock takes. We did 90%, and so in round numbers, the extra provision we've taken in provisioning for obsolescence is around $3 million. The other point I would make, and it was called out, I think, 6 months or so ago when the truck line business was acquired, there was going to be obviously an impact of business mix on margins on that business. If you take away the inventory-specific provision, basically gross margin percentage would have been flat year on year. Cost of doing business has increased as we've grown the business, increased our sales, and made some investments in support functions, particularly in finance, HR, legal, etc., as well as increased marketing across the group, particularly in the specialist wholesale. Given the uncertainty around COVID, we took a conservative position on doubtful debts, and again, in round numbers, around about a $3 million additional provision was raised in doubtful debts. Doubtful debts as a percentage of total debts now sits at just over 6%, whereas historically it was sort of in that mid-fours. I think it's conservative to take that position in this environment. The investments in new assets have meant that our depreciation has slightly increased as we've brought those obviously new assets on, and particularly sort of rolled out new IT improvements in things like point of sale. Our interest is lower due to the lower level of debt and particularly the high level of cash conversion, as well as the impact of obviously having the additional funding coming through on the equity issue. Tax expense is pretty steady. The effective interest rate continues to be around that 29% level in line with our earnings. And the difference between the net profit that you can see on the slide of 89.1 after tax and the statutory 79.2 is essentially two components. The largest component is the recognition of some provisions for costs associated with the expected costs associated with the transition to the new DC warehouse, as well as some smaller costs associated with some acquisitions that didn't proceed during the year. Further details on both of those are included later on in the appendices on slide 33. Moving to slide 18, cash flows. As you can sort of see on this slide, a very, very strong cash flow during the year. Cash generated, excluding acquisitions, was $67.4 million. Cash conversion between 119 and 125%, depending on the leases. Net debt at 30 June was $109.2 million. This compares to $335 million in the prior year, which resulted then in financing costs of $11.6 million compared to $14.5 million in the prior year. Tax paid is basically in line with the tax expense for the year. You can see on the cash flow chart, investments in new stores cost just under $10 million, lower than prior years as we constrain the amount of investment, particularly due to COVID. The prior year, we spent around about $16 million on new stores. The CapEx number you can see of $35 million includes around about $12 million in relation to the Victorian consolidation of the DC project. So without that, it would have been around about a net $23 million. Again, slightly lower than what we had in prior year as we managed our way through COVID. Really importantly, if you look at the cash flow statement and you say, well, operating cash flow stood at just over $200 million. If you take off the CapEx for the new stores of $45 million, the finance leases of $55 million, and the small amount for the shares for the long-term incentive, that would have left $100 million of cash flow, which was sufficient to fully fund the dividend, as well as the acquisitions that were made during the year. The acquisitions that were made during the year cost us $68 million. That's a combination of truck line and diesel payments, as well as the deferred payment for Dunkyre that was acquired in the prior year. Overall, you can sort of see very strong cash flow, and the balance sheet has also benefited from the rights issue that was issued at $4.40, which raised $236 million. Turning now to the balance sheet on slide 19. You can see here the balance sheet is in very good shape. As I've said, net debt at 30 June was $109 million. Leverage sits at 0.7 times. You can see an increase in inventories year on year. It's essentially because of the growth in the business acquisitions and the investment in new stores. The property, plant and equipment number has increased over the year by $15 million, and that's a combination, obviously, the new stores coming on, less depreciation over the years. The movement in intangibles is attributed to the acquisitions during the year, and the increase in trade credits year on year is $43 million. And that is essentially as a result of the acquisitions made during the year. You'll see there on the balance sheet the impact of recognising leases now on balance sheet, which essentially we recognise an asset, a right of use asset, and a lease liability. The last comment I'd make on trade working capital sales, as Darryl mentioned, we've improved it from 21% to 17.4%. And so the business continues to look at optimising its working capital position as well as maximising cash generation. Turning now to slide 20, just to give you a perspective of the liquidity of the group. What you can sort of see on this slide is essentially our net debt position. In terms of our debt, we've got $520 million of facilities, with $2.5 million of that $520 associated with bank guarantees. So of the $517 million of facilities, we've drawn $231 million and have just under $287 million undrawn as at 30th of June. The average remaining tenor on our debt book stands at just under 3.5 years. I've mentioned leverage standing at 0.7 times. Had we not done the equity issue, leverage would have been around the 2 times, which is in line with where it has been for the last couple of years. You can see on the top table on the slide 20, some of our credit metrics with our fixed cover ratio at 3 times and interest cover at 12 times. Well ahead of our covenant requirements, so our liquidity is in a very good position. Lastly, now just some comments on slide 21, which just sets out the dividend profile over the last number of years. The board has declared a final dividend of 9.5 cents per share, bringing the full year dividend to the 17.5 cents a share compared to that 17 cents last year, which is just under a 3% increase. In terms of payout ratio, current year dividend on a full year basis represents a 62% of pro forma NPAT payout. Dividend record date, as you can see, is 31 August with payment on 11 September. Incidentally, the 11 September is about 2 weeks earlier this year than it was last year. Shares on issue following the rights issue over the year have increased. Now we've got $339 million, million shares on issue, up 20%. Given the strong position of the balance sheet, the low level of gearing, a decision was also then made to suspend the DRP for the final dividend. With that now, I'll hand back to Darryl.
Thanks, Noel, and you joined the group at a good time to be able to put an excellent financial position, so in a very strong position. And just with that, I just would like to acknowledge Greg Fox for 9 years. He was Bapcor's CFO. He retired at the end of June. I have no doubt he's listening to this call, probably a bit jealously because of the excellent results here, but we'd just like to thank Greg, and his contribution over the 9 years was outstanding. So and set it up pretty well. Just turning now to the strategic area, this will be fairly quick because nothing's changed. So on slide 23, it shows we're very public in showing what our targets are over the 5 years. These targets haven't changed. The only thing that's changed is where we sit currently, and there have been some delays. We haven't probably achieved. We haven't got as far as we may have been expecting to in the last financial year, but that was quite deliberate because of the decisions we made when COVID hit, it's constrained some of our expansion activities. But the direction and where we're aiming to get to has not affected and has not changed. So. Slide 24, again, we have a consistent delivery of specific and measurable targets, and we believe we still have significant growth to come. And we show the main areas here, how we target to grow and continue our growth. And given that we're in an excellent position financially, we can act on good opportunities as they arise. Turning to slide 25, just some updates on some of our key strategic initiatives. We have implemented the warehouse management system. It was put into our Nunawading DC earlier this year, and it's operating well with improved efficiencies and set us up pretty well for the new consolidated DC. And I'll talk about our consolidated DC at Tullamarine. It's on the next page, so I'll come back to that. Retail point of sale system, the state-of-the-art point of sale has been implemented in the Autobahn. It had been delayed a bit through COVID-19, but in fairness, it's also had some challenges in implementing it. I'd have to say that both the supplier and our team have lifted themselves very well to address those challenges, and now it's progressing very well. We did update the technology infrastructure. We invested heavily in new infrastructure. It was completed in December. We're implementing a new safety data system to ensure that we're right on top of safety and our zero harm commitments. We're implementing some category leaderships, and the first couple are underway with aircon and tools and electrical accessories and 4x4. So we expect that to drive some of our business going forward. I mentioned earlier on the retail side that we are implementing over this next 6 months or in this financial year a new e-commerce platform. So as everyone knows, technology moves on, and we're investing heavily in a new e-commerce platform to enable us, and particularly on the retail and trade side. So it will become our platform that we'll be able to use for many years to come, and it is right up there as state of the art. It's one of the top tier platforms, so that will put us in a good position. And as I mentioned earlier, Bapcor's always on the lookout for businesses that fit with our core strategy. So we don't want to go outside our core strategy, but we're always looking for things that are fairly priced, even though at the moment it's pretty difficult to do much on these when you're restricted as where you can move. So, but our Melbourne DC, the new DC in Melbourne, this is a massive DC. It's 50,000 square metres. It will have state-of-the-art technology, which is called goods to person. And for those that don't understand what that is, we will be putting a video up on our website so people can actually see exactly how all of that works. But it's a very big DC. It's under construction, Tullamarine in Victoria. It's well under construction, as you can see from the photos. We expect to be into that DC early in 2021. With COVID restrictions, that could move a little bit. What we've shown on this page also, sometimes accounting baffles everybody, including me, particularly with new accounting standards and AASB 16. So we've just shown over the years how the transition costs will roll out over the next three years, but there's also this little funny thing called right of use assets that we get a cost recorded and then eventually we get a credit. So if you don't understand that, you can call Noel and ask him. We just thought it's important that people understand how we expect at this stage for it to impact going forward. We're looking forward to this facility because with our increased sales, our warehousing teams are really at maximum, in fact, probably above maximum capacity, and are doing a fantastic job at it, and especially in Victoria where two of our main DCs are and they're having to operate at reduced manning levels because of the COVID restrictions. So, just moving on now to the all-important trading update. So on page 28, I'd mentioned that we'd had some big ups and downs during the last year. Well, that's continuing. July was a very, very strong month, and it followed on from a solid May and June. And you can see here, same-store sales, Burson trade being up 15%, New Zealand being up 10%. Retail Autobarn continued to be 50% up on same-store sales, and even our specialist wholesale businesses on a comparative basis for July the prior year, depending on the business unit, they're up between 15 and 20%. And a lot of this has continued into August. Even though August is being impacted by the Melbourne restrictions and now the New Zealand restrictions, we don't expect them to have a mature, at this stage, in the way it's panning out, to have a material impact simply because our retail business is up even with all the Melbourne stores closed. It is still up on the prior year on a same store sales basis. And whilst it is impacting some of the other businesses, the strength in the rest of Australia is largely compensating for it. In New Zealand, we are down a bit, and circa probably 30%, but the business is tracking reasonably well. So we've had an excellent start to 21. We believe it is driven by the increase, and the end of last year was driven by the increased consumer cash availability, with people having low restaurant spend, travel, low entertainment combined with the government stimulus and super withdrawals. So we know that some of that is flowing through, so we don't expect to continue forever at the heightened activity levels. But we do believe that COVID-19 is likely to result in changes that will be a significant positive for the automotive aftermarket, because we expect to see more vehicle use and kilometres travelled, with more domestic travel and lower public transport use. More vehicles per household, and we've seen record used car sales. In fact, there's shortages of used cars these days. So that bears well for us. There's more repair and less replacement. So we expect people to be keeping their cars, and a large part of that will be due to the economic conditions and the uncertain conditions. So that also leads to average age of vehicles getting older, and there's certainly a lot more do-it-yourself activity that we're seeing. So Bapcor expects that with the addition of the truck line business and the ongoing improvements in our other businesses, including retail, that these will all positively contribute to the current year. However, the caution that we have is that lockdowns in Melbourne and Auckland and any future government restrictions could have an impact on trading conditions and earnings. So with the lack of clarity and uncertainty around both those and the underlying economic conditions, it's not possible for us to give a forecast at all. However, historically, our businesses have been very resilient to economic downturns, and it's not just only Bapcor's business, but the industry. And you look through the GFC, you look at historic economic downturns, our industry tends to do very well through them. So with that, we'll give a further update at our AGM in October as to how we're tracking, because we'll have another couple of months under our belt by then, that we'll give an update there. So I'd also, just in finishing, acknowledge again the contribution of all our team members, and also thank the board of Bapcor for their support. We've been through some up and down periods over this last year, where at the beginning of COVID it was pretty hard to see how deep that black hole was going to be. We came out of it very well, and we've been very strongly supported by our board. So also thank everyone for joining us today, and we'll now go over to questions and answers. So operator, could you handle questions and answers for us?
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Again, star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the pound or hash key. Your first question is from the line of Tom Godfrey from UBS. Your line is now open.
How are you, Tom? You've taken over from someone else who used to always be first on the Q&As.
Just getting lucky, Darryl. Thanks very much for taking my questions this morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's good.
Perfect. If I can just start with the trade business and the July trading update of 15% same-store sales growth, can I just get you to confirm that is an acceleration versus June, which from memory was down around the 10% mark, and I'd just be interested in your view in terms of what's driving the acceleration into July and August?
It's a slight acceleration. It's also got to do remembering with the comparative period last year, because it is same store sales comparative. So it is a slight acceleration, but it's not materially different, I don't expect. We did have a bit of a softer July last year, so that's a big part of it. So, but the actual demand levels, and if I look at absolute dollars, fairly consistent with May and June.
Got it. And I think you did touch on it before, but just to confirm, you are seeing the majority of this driven just by increasing end user demand, and just any other anecdotes you've got around the current sort of trading conditions?
Look, it's a really interesting one, and I'll break it by our businesses. So on the trade side, I think there's probably a little bit of people have got the time to get their car serviced and they've got the cash, not that I would usually expect that servicing's driven by a lot of that, but we have seen that in the past. But people are going to get the car serviced extra times just because they've got the cash. So it'll just be that servicing is certainly there. And I think it's also because people are using their cars, because of the potential of if there's COVID lockdowns, people want reliability in their vehicles, etc. When I look at the retail side, it is really being driven by, and I'll use the word a bit more of the dress up, etc., because if I'll give you some of the the areas. Roof racks are up substantially, tools, performance, so things like steering wheels and internal gauges and stuff. Mobile electronics are up significantly, and seat covers, would you believe? Sheepskin seat covers are the in thing. And they're up like 60% over the prior year. So a lot of the retail, I think, is driven by dress up, and some of it is certainly improvements in our business. Our retail business was improving prior to the May-June. Did slightly dip when COVID first hit, but a lot of the things the team have been doing, we're seeing starting to come through, and we've got a brand new format of the stores that we've recently launched in Bayswater, Victoria, and it is fantastic. So we're seeing a whole lot of different drivers sitting in there.
Got it. That's very clear. Just second question, can I just ask, just given the demand environment short term, can I ask how you're thinking about price increases in fiscal 21, just for trade and retail?
Retail, we probably don't see a lot, but it's more driven by our cost prices. I don't at the moment also see a huge increase in trade, but we wouldn't have anything, especially when currency strengthened, etc. It does make it a lot harder. So at this stage, I'm not sure that we'll see a lot come through, but a lot of it really depends on what comes through from our suppliers, and we're not seeing lots of indication of increases. There's some, but not a significant amount at this stage. But we would always pass them through whenever they come through. We don't wait to pass through increases, except that what we call the cost recovery that we try and do usually in January, we would certainly be looking at that again this year.
Got it. And last one from me. Can I just ask for a little more detail on the negative operating leverage and margin degradation for Specialist Wholesale, and just how we should be thinking about margins in fiscal 21?
Yeah, no. The biggest degradation in Specialist Wholesale is, number one, the bring in Truckline, because it's, as we'd indicated, whilst we might have got $57 million of revenue, its earnings are nowhere near the percentage performance that you would expect on the overall business. So we would expect to see that gradually improve. It won't happen overnight, but we're seeing it gradually improve, so we're quite comfortable with that. But the second part is, I would expect to see the percentage be slightly lower than historical, simply because of where we've now in the short term invested in resource to manage it correctly, because the last thing we want is to have businesses that we're not managing properly. So we have definitely increased our investment in marketing in particular, because we want to drive the marketing side of our own brand products and through that group. So when you join those dots, you'll see how they all fit together. So it will be lower than historical, we expect it to improve from where it currently is.
Got it. Thanks for taking my questions, guys.
Thanks, Tom. Operator.
Your next question is from the line of Matthew Nicholas from Credit Suisse. You may ask your question.
Morning, gents. Congratulations on the result. Thanks for taking the questions. Maybe first one, just a nitpicking, just that corporate cost line. I may have missed the comment earlier in the call, but just to confirm, in that corporate cost line of 24 mil, there's a 3 million provision in terms of bad and doubtful debts, and there's another 3 million write down on inventory. Is that correct?
Yeah, the majority of it's certainly in that line, yes.
Right. So as a go forward,
it'd be also fair to assume that we would not expect it to be recurring.
That's good to hear. So as a go-forward rate, should we expect that 16 to 17 mil? And the reason I ask that question, I'm just trying to reconcile that with the comment you've got in terms of the Tullamarine DC slide, where you expect to take some provisions going forward. Can we just get some colour on that as to where those provisions will sit?
Okay. The Tullamarine provisions are just the transition costs. So the majority of those are where there'll be some make goods on the current warehouses, where there's we expect there'll be some redundancy costs, and there's other things that in normal course we would have capitalised them, but under the accounting standard you can't. So it's nothing to do whatsoever to do with things like, and nothing to do with inventory or debts or anything like that. They're normal operating. We wouldn't put any of those in there whatsoever. So it's just those areas of transition costs. And another one's what, like if we've got a lease tail, then that shows through. And that's that funny thing that shows in there where you get the credit in 2024 or something.
Right. Thanks, Matt. Just to follow on from, sorry.
You could expect the ongoing head office areas to be somewhere in the sort of high teens in annual cost.
Right. Thanks. And just following on from Tom's question on margin, if you go into this thing, you've had a really big step up in house brand in the second half. I mean, your key businesses, you've got an exit rate of about 30%. Even in the absence of price increases this year, I mean, given a lot of that house brand stuff, you're a direct importer, would it be fair to assume you've got another margin tailwind via currency, just given where the Aussie's sitting at the moment?
Not necessarily, because a lot of that we don't do a significant amount of it direct. It comes via secondary or local suppliers. But the components that we buy direct, there's a potential currency benefit, yes. It's a question of then, how does that happen? Does it get passed through to the market? Same as when we have increases, will we need to? And there's some indication that some of that will go back to the market just to ensure that we're competitive. Because some of the smaller players don't, dare I say, realise that you can actually potentially make money by it and not passing it through. So we've just got to stay competitive.
Sure. And just the last one on me, just in terms of cash flow, you obviously have a cracking cash flow number. Should we expect a level of normalisation in terms of working capital in the upcoming half? And I suppose just an extension to that, just the cash outflows on Tullamarine to expect this year?
Tullamarine, there's not a lot of cash outflows because most of that's a lease. So there is a little bit that, and I'll get Noel to cover it, but most of the Tullamarine was paid out some this year and there's a little bit next year. Noel, do you want to just cover it?
So, Matt, if you look at, if we can bring your attention to slide 26, you'll see there a capital number of estimated at $34 million. Of that, we've currently spent 12. So then that leaves 22. There's an incentive then to come through with the 14, so you get the difference of that, the 14 to the 22 to come through as a cash outflow thereabouts, so $8 to $10 million.
Right. And sorry, and just the part on working capital this year, just given how strong it was at the back end of last year.
Yeah, working capital will probably, we wouldn't, if we were estimating our cash generation over this next 12 months, we would expect it to be more traditional, that sort of 90 to 100% conversion. It was an exceptional year, and a large part of the exceptional year this year is because of the steps we took during COVID about cutting back on discretionary spend, cutting back on capital investment, et cetera, et cetera. When we didn't know how deep that hole was going to be. So you wouldn't expect that to continue.
Right. Thanks for taking my questions, guys. Well done.
Thanks, Matt. Operator, next question.
Yes, sir. Your next question is from the line of Joe Little from Morgans. Your line is now open.
Morning,
Darren. One day I'm going to write down who's going to be the first three questions, and I'm pretty accurate, I reckon. It's a sequence.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for that. Just on Truckline, you called out a $2.8 million in FY20. Was that after acquisition cost and in the stat result? Because I think it was a $7.2 million EBITDA kind of business at acquisition, just trying to work out an annualised run rate.
There was no acquisition costs in that at all. It would have been, it was insignificant.
Yeah, right. So
because the acquisitions, the little bit of acquisition costs for Truckline were actually incurred in the first half, and some of those were in the significant items that are below the line, but it wasn't a material amount. And the biggest component of it was the stamp duty, and that was taken up in the first half of the year.
Okay, so if we think about just what's your view on the annualised EBITDA capability of this kind of business, just to give us incremental for next year?
We'd expect it to get up to the normal levels of our specialist wholesale businesses, we'd always say it's over a 3-year period, because this was a business that was basically generating almost nothing. So over a 3-year period, and specialist wholesale, we'd expect to be around that 10% EBITDA to sales. So over 3 years, we'd expect it to get there. Otherwise, we couldn't have invested in it.
Okay, thank you. And just back on those margin questions, particularly in trade in Australia, obviously we're cycling a pretty weak first half due to that promotional shift last year. Is there anything else in trade, particularly in Australia, you need to call out on costs, or would you expect that strong sales outcome at the moment to be producing strong OpEx leverage?
In the absence of anything and us making a decision to do any further promotional things, which we're already doing some, we would expect it to continue on the way it's performing at the moment. I don't expect that the heightened level of activity that we're seeing over the last few months will be sustainable in the longer term, but I do expect that it won't drop sort of back to below, sort of like to go to negative, but where we've always in the past said we'd expect a 3-4% growth year on year, I'd expect it to drop back to those sort of levels after this heightened activity goes, because even though some of the things are driving it, I expect that to settle a bit. And it's also the competitive side around it. If we have taken market share, I don't expect the competitor's going to sit and say that was very nice, thank you.
Okay, got it. And Darryl, I think I missed what you said on New Zealand. I think it was an August comment, just down 30% post the renewed lockdowns. Can you just confirm what you commented on there?
Yeah, look, I think it'd be fair to assume that both Auckland and Australia, and this is pretty similar to what we saw, Auckland and Melbourne, not dissimilar, that once you're in lockup, your sales do drop, and we'd expect to see something along those lines, that it drops under the current restrictions, probably somewhere in the 30% mark, but it's still a bit early in that to identify. Certainly on the Burson, because of the bigger footprint in Australia, Burson, with where we're up in the northern states, etc., it's the balance is such that we're absorbing it. Whereas in New Zealand, you don't have quite the same number of stores and the same balance, so it would have a bit of an impact at those sorts of levels.
Okay, thank you. Just lastly, just on supply chain and stock, any shortages you've seen in recent months, and how's the supply chain flowing today? And I guess
yes,
on Matt's question, just working capital build next year, how much are we short inventory, if any?
I wouldn't say we're short inventory, because our warehouses are going like the clappers. They're pushing out everything they can get in. The only thing is that, and it's not material, but because demand's been so high in retail, and I think this is probably a little bit of the JB Hi-Fi type comments, that there are some product groups that we are having difficulty sourcing the volumes that we're selling. But is it material overall? No. But there will be some areas that we struggle, because nobody would have ever planned on a 50% same-store sales. And if it did happen, you might expect it for a month for some reason. But it's the degree that it's actually been happening and continues to happen that's there. But some of the inventory challenges are being fixed to some degree by the lockdowns.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the comment.
Thanks, Joe. Operator.
Your next question is from the line of John Campbell from Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Good Thanks, Daryl and Noel. Just a couple of questions from me. Just to summarise what you were saying, Daryl, in terms of trade around pricing. So in terms of gross margins, which were down a little bit in FY20, understandably, so are you saying that you think gross margins will stabilise in FY21 at these levels and then hopefully as promotional activity drops away, potentially improve into later years?
Yeah, look, one of the things on page 10, we did point out that the gross margin in the second half was fairly strong. And I think so we went the first half where it was, or this is the EBITDA margin, was 13.5, second half recovered to 15.4. So you can see there's a big swing there. Taking that in the average area to get back to where we were in FY19, at sort of that 14.9 at EBITDA to sales, I think that would be not unreasonable that we should be getting back there.
Under pre-AASB.
Oh, yeah, God, yes.
Yeah.
If you can figure out the after AASB, I'll employ you.
Yeah, okay. And just in terms of gross margin in retail, is sort of similar comments would you make in terms of a dip in gross margin but in FY20 but coming back in 21?
Yeah, actually, that'd be fair. Our gross margin in retail has been sitting pretty good. The fact that we were... The thing that's influenced gross margin work, it's a bit tricky in retail, is when we're adding company stores...
Yeah.
So I don't see a lot of that. I think we're pretty much where we'll be. We'll add company stores, but they won't be a transition from franchise to company where you push your essentially your margin goes down, but dollars go up. So if you assume FY19 type margins ongoing is where we're certainly targeting.
Yeah. Okay. Look, just two more questions quickly. Firstly, the other retail stores, store base shrunk in FY20. How do you see that? And presumably that's just closure of underperforming stores. How do you see that travelling in 21?
I would expect it to be fairly stable. We've actually had we've actually converting some, I'll call it Autobahn stores into, so you're going to see a little bit of a move from in this next year from some Autobahn stores to become Auto Pros because they're in the store standards, the size of the stores don't match up to what we want Autobahn to stand for. So we'll see a little bit of a movement there. But overall, I wouldn't expect to see significant changes in that other area over the next 12 months.
Okay, thanks. And just one for Noel. So you've said you're well ahead on your debt covenants. Can you just tell us what are the main covenants and whether there's been any changes post AASB 16?
Yes, John. The covenants are measured on a excluding AASB 16, so there's no impact on covenants from that. The main covenants you sort of see on that chart and on that table on slide 20. Let me just flick to it.
So they're your main covenants that you've called out there.
Essentially, yeah. So the first, it's mainly the first two, the net leverage and the fixed cover ratio. We don't have a specific interest cover covenant, but it's included just as an interest. So the top two.
And you've got to get up on the net leverage. You've got to get up to 3x before we're in any strife.
Yeah. Okay.
And the second one needs to be above 1.75x.
Yeah. Okay. That's really good. Thanks, guys.
No problem. Thanks. Operator, any more questions?
Yes, sir. We have a question from Jody Barnes of ACSI. Your line is now open.
Good morning. Thank you. I'd like to ask a question around the culture of the management team, because if I look at your disclosure, I can see that you've access rent relief, government subsidies, you've stood down some staff, and you've had an emergency capital raising throughout the year, and yet management has accepted a greater STI this year than they did in FY19. And whilst I think there's a lot of judgment questions investors should ask around board discretion, what I would like to know is, did the ELT offer to forfeit their STI, or did they offer to take it in equity to align themselves to shareholders? And given the STI was paid out at higher levels and in cash, what it says about the culture of the management team?
Well, I'm not sure that you're asking the right people that, but I actually take offence at some of those questions, in that if you want to understand the culture of the management team, I would suggest you spend time with them. They have put in an enormous effort over this period. The company is in a very solid financial position. Shareholders have done very well in the last year, issuing equity to management, if you understand the tax laws in Australia, is disadvantageous to anybody, because you get taxed at 50% on it, and it means that you're forcing management to sell the shares as soon as they get issued. So it's not a very smart way to go about it. So I'd probably
sorry,
leave
but
it at that.
I was interested to hear about the culture at Bapcor.
Well, that's what I said. I expect that you should spend some time with the management team if you want to understand the culture. You're not going to get an answer on a very short phone call. You're just not going to.
Okay.
The team here are very pro and very dedicated to what they do, and they also the focus is always about our team members and ensuring that they are looked after as well as we look after our shareholders as well.
Okay. I have a question around inventory levels. I can see that, you know, it continued to grow higher year on year. And looking at past reports, it's always been high and suggesting cash conversion is probably low. Can you make some commentary, just because there's a lot of discussion around record sales and yet that inventory level keeps continuing. And if I look at the inventory to sales ratio, it's also increasing.
Well, in fact, our working capital to sales measures have actually improved year over year. Inventory, the main increase in the inventory is due to acquisitions. Excluding the acquisitions, the inventory to sales is actually reduced year over year.
Okay, thank you. That's the end of my questions.
Okay, thanks, operator.
Yes, sir. Your next question is from Sagar S. of Investor. Your line is now open.
Wanted to quickly look at more from a macro perspective, your thoughts in the next sort of 3 to 5 years around investing in e-commerce or online channels versus actual physical footprint. And then second question more around what are you doing from a, I guess, national branding and marketing perspective to really drive home the message in H220 around the fact that people will need to service their car a lot more because they'll be traveling domestically rather than internationally. So keen for your thoughts on that.
There's probably on the second question, we don't tend to directly do some of that, but certainly through some of our franchise businesses. So you might hear ads that on Midas, which is one of our franchise businesses, on the servicing side, encouraging servicing by people. So we do push that fairly hard, and we'll continue to do so. We also, through the industry association, which we're a member of the AASSA, we try and push some of that as well. So just. And sorry, on the e-commerce, I mentioned on the call that we're investing in a new e-commerce platform, and it's our online sales through retail are up significantly. Interestingly, the biggest part of our online sales are click and collect, we're still getting people in store, which we prefer. And we don't talk too much about this, but on our trade side of our business, about 20-25% of our sales come electronically. It's on a B2B platform. That's also this investment we're doing, which is quite material, that is to enable that to upgraded from what we currently have. Across the world, automotive parts and accessories, even when you look at the US, Less than 6%, I think it is, of the market is actually transacted online. So we actually don't see the online side being a material part of the ongoing business. But having said that, we are certainly investing in it to get whatever there is and make sure we get a fair share of it. So we are investing in that area. But our vision at this point, and it's supported pretty much by most of the global players, is that especially on the trade side of the business, we deliver 80 or 85% of where we get orders. They're delivered in less than an hour. So we don't see an online platform from a retail perspective for that part of the business, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense. My question was more on the retail front. Just to follow up on that then, is there a difference in margins between online sales versus in-store sales? I'm assuming, given the new Melbourne DC coming on board, is there going to be more efficiency with online retail sales and then correspondingly a better margin compared to in-store or not?
Certainly the new DC has been designed so that we can do essentially a court input and have a much more efficient way of handling online sales. So that's an absolute design requirement that we've put in there. So it's what we might call emergency orders or orders that need to go out quickly. So that certainly is designed into it, and we would expect to get much better efficiency at it from there. As far as the margin goes, there's not a great difference for us in the margin between online sales and the in-store sales, because the labour and the freight probably offset any other savings that we would get out of it. So the margin's not a lot different, and in some areas it's probably a bit tighter than the in-store margins.
Okay, makes sense. Thank you. Great result.
Thanks.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question is from James Ferrier of Wilsons. You may ask your question.
Thanks. Morning, gents. Congratulations on the result, and can I commend you for your decision to pay that thank you incentive to your permanent staff? I think that's a great sign.
Thanks.
Just to go on from the last question to confirm a couple of aspects to that, Daryl, you mentioned the trade is about 20 to 25% orders placed online. What was that figure maybe sort of 12 months, 3 years ago? Where's that trend come from?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one. We've had the online system for probably about 8, 9, 10 years. It's increased, but it's very, very small. It might be 1 or 2% increase in the last 12 months. It has plateaued, and a big part of that is that a lot of mechanics, when they've got a vehicle up on a hoist and they need parts, they're still highly preferred to pick up, whether I agree with it or not, but they tend to pick up the phone and check to see how long that, number one, you've got the part, number two is how long is it going to be, because they're making decisions on what they do with their hoists and the vehicles that are there. So it's what we're aiming to do with the new e-commerce is just take a quantum leap in how they can use it on being able to use it on, call it, tablets and phones and all that sort of stuff. Whether or not they will actually use it is still a big question mark that sits there.
Yeah, okay. And just your comment around the new warehouse, did I hear you correctly in that you would expect that it will have the capability for direct fulfilment for online orders as opposed to...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's for both trade and retail?
When I say direct fulfilment, it's really, and I'll call it the retail online, it'll have the ability to fulfil, which we do today, so it's just it'll be in a more efficient way of doing it coming out of the GTP, because a lot of that online sales aren't big items. So we expect to be able to do it. The system's been designed, and those would be done via, we expect, via the courier services or by whether it's Australia Post or whoever. We don't see ourselves delivering those direct. And the same would go with our trade businesses, that we do fulfilment for them, pretty much replenishing stores, etc. I don't see us doing, for example, direct from the warehouse to a mechanic. I don't see us doing that because that would just be totally inefficient for us. That's why we have the degree of trade stores around the place, because you need to have the product close to the mechanic. Now, can we get it out quickly from the DC to our stores? Absolutely. And could we potentially deliver direct to a customer if we needed to? Absolutely. But that would be the exceptions to the rule rather than anything else. Our primary thing is to try and ensure that we have the product in the local store close to the customer, because that's the most efficient way to do it.
Okay, great. And then the last question, slide 25, can you just elaborate on you know, what you mean, what your goals are around category leadership?
Oh, okay. So what we're doing is that we want to have experts, and it's really, this is our specialist wholesale business to a large degree, but in categories is to have somebody's the expert in that category, and then our retail and trade and frontline businesses are sourcing their product all from there. So if for example, we've got somebody that's the aircon specialist, which we do have, then all our businesses would source the product through that. And if they need something additional, or they want to expand the range, that's the expertise person or area that they would go to, rather than them having to have that expert in their business as well. So as to try and make sure that we don't duplicate expertise within each of the various businesses that we've got at the front line.
Okay, that makes sense. Helpful. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, James. Operator, any more questions?
Yes, sir. You have a question from Supratim Datta of Citi.
Hi, gents. Morning. Congrats on the great result. I have two questions. One, on slide 24, you have set targets for your store rollout. How should we think about FY21 rollout and how it would compare with these targets?
FY21 should be somewhere within those targets. There shouldn't be too many that aren't. We've already, like if I look at some of them, we've already got quite a few stores approved in a number of those areas. The only thing that can and is having a bit of an impact at the moment is whatever might be the COVID restrictions, because, for example, we have both in the Burson and the retail side. There are teams of people that do the store fit outs and preparation and rollout. So with them not being able to travel, it's making it a little bit more difficult. But we're sort of adjusting for that by having local people do it. So I'd still expect at this stage, unless the restrictions become more than they are at the moment, that we should meet most of these targets. But the only thing that will hold us back will be any COVID or other type restrictions.
Sure. And my second question is regarding New Zealand. So BNT sales in July are up 10%. So just trying to understand your comment regarding deleverage in the New Zealand business. So why are you talking about that?
Yeah, New Zealand was up in July, like most of the other businesses, but with the COVID restrictions in Auckland, where they're now in stage four, I think it is, then that is impacting the business, as you would expect, because a lot of our Auckland stores, they're all from a front entrance closed, and a lot of the mechanics, they're only allowed to do what they might call emergency work, etc. So that's dampen the demand in the Auckland area, and they've only, if you take outside of Auckland, you just don't, as distinct from our Burson business. New Zealand's got in that business 73 locations. I can't remember the exact number, but X number in Auckland, whereas in the Burson case, we've got 186, 187 stores, and about 30 of those, 25, are in the Melbourne metro. So you can see the percentage-wise we've got more upside in the Australian business, just simply because of there are more stores overall.
Sure. Got it. Thanks.
All right, thanks very much. Any other questions, operator?
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Again, star 1 on your telephone.
Do we have any questions, operator, or is it none at the moment?
There are no further questions over the phone. Speakers, please continue.
We might leave it there because we're sort of a little bit over our allotted time. But thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll see a lot of people on one-to-ones and happy to fill in any gaps at that stage. So thanks very much. Thanks, operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now all disconnect. Have a good day, everyone.